extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Ow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from Kansas City. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle. I don't know if you guys know, but there's some news around these parts. I have grackles in my backyard. No, I'm just kidding. The 2021 MLS schedule is out. We know all 459 games. The how, when, where, I guess we already understood the why, but it is right there for you to peruse. MLSsoccer.com. Just go through this whole thing. Start circling dates. Start saying, okay, we got a bubble watch party right here. All right, we're going to be vaccinated by this time, so I feel comfortable going to the stadium, likely with a mask on. At least that's where I'll be doing it. Like, I'm dreaming. I'm jacked. That's what the beginning of this show is going to be about. Just so you know what the rest of the show is about, we've got team previews coming for you. Inter Miami, Nashville, Vancouver, Colorado. Dave, you got the top 10 number 10s. Top 5? Sorry, I said 10s and I wanted to say 10, and maybe 10 would be 10, more appropriate.
It actually falls off around 7 or 8.
Really? Okay, yeah. Well,
we'll talk
We'll debate that. The number 10s, that finishes up our top 5
if
overall
series.
If you
don't have Latif Blessing in the top 5, I'm just going to eviscerate you. Anyway,
you guys, I'm here to piss off. It's fine. I'm already pissing off 18 fan bases by naming a top 5 to 7. So it's going to be a good day.
That's true. That's really what these have accomplished. We were trying to celebrate the best of the best in Major League Soccer, but it turns out we were just trolling everybody else, and that's, I guess, what the content machine is these days. MLSsoccer.com. Hey, did I mention the schedule's out? Yeah, boom. All the coverage right there. I've got a column on the communal joy of the 2021 schedule being out, and also some quick takeaways on there that we'll get to in just a second. Doyle, you got breakout player candidates for every single team and when to watch them this season. What might be a big date for them?
Yeah, this one was actually fun to write because it allowed me to go down the roster a little bit for every team and then to look at the schedule and figure out, okay, when are these coaches going to be rotating their lineups? And obviously with the Gold Cup, the Olympics maybe, and then World Cup qualifying in September. And that's when it's like 3-game weeks for everybody. Yeah. We are going to see more of these rosters than ever before. So there is going to be a lot of breakout potential. Go check out that column. You'll notice that the game to watch for these guys just coincidentally happens to be a national TV game. Just like complete coincidence. Ah,
it is so funny how that works.
Yeah. So that's our segue, right? Because as someone who has been a fan of MLS from before MLS actually existed, the big thing for this league has always been to get in front of as many eyes as possible. Like, that is the bar, and that is the difference, like just an astounding difference with this year's schedule. There are 5 games on ABC. There are 7 games on Fox. There are 11 games on Univision. And you've said this a million times when we were doing our Twitter spaces about the live launch of the schedule yesterday, Weeby. Like, if you go through the first 7 weeks, there's like 15, 16 games that you don't need a cable package to watch. Like, you could just watch them over the air or on Twitter. It feels like a turning point, dude. It does.
Yeah,
like,
look,
it's going to be more people able to watch our league.
And I see there's a Twitter account going around, and we'll give you the nitty-gritty in a second. And I don't know who runs this Twitter account, but I completely agree with the sentiments. And if you're listening right now and you're thinking, well, this is, you know, MLSsoccer.com, yeah, here's the connection. The Twitter account is basically saying, for us to see our sport grow and to see our leagues grow, and I say leagues plural because it's not just Major League Soccer, it's NWSL, it's USL Championship, it's League One, it's whatever it might be that you love, you have to be a part of that movement. And this Twitter account is saying, hey, let's all get together. Let's like unionize in a sense to agree to watch the games. And that's what this podcast has always been about. We've always said, okay, don't tell us about what you're hearing. Don't tell us about what the headline said. Did you watch the game? What did you see? What is your takeaway? And that is why this day, schedule release day, for me is so exciting. You said it, 16 games. You can watch 14 teams in the first 7 weeks. They're hectic. They're helter-skelter. There are no midweek games there, so it's just weekends. Just boom, 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 boom. You can watch them on Fox. You can watch them on ABC. If it's on Unimas or Univision, you can watch those games on Twitter as well. We've already dove into week one. We understand the big games in week one. We know we're going to watch LAFC Austin FC on Fox. We know we're going to watch Inter-Miami LA Galaxy on ABC. I know that I'm going to be watching and perhaps trolling Orlando fans when they host Atlanta United on Unimas and Twitter. I mean, I'm just giddy for these moments, and I'm also giddy for the moment that I get to walk into Children's Mercy Park with my son, and it's safe, and all these sacrifices that we've made, and all these changes to our lives that we've endured, and all these people that we have to honor, tragically, we can do it together. I can't wait for that moment where he looks down at me, and he's smiling, and he's like, I love this too. And maybe I'm just projecting here. Maybe he'll be like, yo, this is lame. Get me out of here. Like, I thought we were going to play in the backyard or go to the park, but I am hopeful that I have that communion
scenario where he looks down. Aren't you like 6'2"?
Yeah. Yeah. But he'll be on my shoulders in this scenario.
Oh
yeah. Yeah. Everybody behind me is going to hate me.
Yeah. Yep. I forgot you know that Norman Rockwell created this moment for you.
So yeah. It's in very rich colors. It's not quite like watercolors, but it really jumps off the page at you. It's just pure Americana.
Real
or whatever
FDR
the equivalent in Canada is. I don't know what that equivalent is. But yeah, look, the first 7 weeks of the season, if you go check the schedule, it was clearly very, very intentional. And I'm thankful for that. The schedule czar, as I call him, Brad Purcell over at MLS. He is the senior VP of like game management and schedule making. And I don't envy him at all. I don't want his job. I know what I'm about, which is growing the game in this country. That's the one job I would say, no, thank you. I don't need to be in the kitchen with like 500 cooks at a time. Brad has done yeoman's work over the past 2 years to get MLS games on a schedule. And he's done a great job here as well, along with his team. So congratulations to him. Those first 7 weeks are going to be really fun. And then there's an international break. And then we just push on into an insane rest of 2021. Because you mentioned it, Doyle. The midweek games start to ramp up. The international breaks start to come thick and fast because there are so many different competitions. And we hope that one of those for U.S. and Canada fans, you know, hopefully both, but I think Mexico's going to have something to say about that, is the Olympics, the U.S. U-23s.
Against each other, which would make it impossible.
They lost 1-0 to the U.S. to Mexico. Sebastian Soto with a back pass that you got to close your eyes for and hopefully wipe your memory banks, and maybe in the final the U.S.
That's exactly what he did right before hitting that pass.
He did. He was like, no way, there's a guy there. No way, I'm playing it right into his path. But it's going to be busy, and it's going to be fun. And Dave, you've done maybe the most important work of any of us on this schedule release. Yeah. And that is what?
So schedule release day, it's huge. You start to plan out your year. Fans can figure out travel, all those things. For me, the biggest part is the teams that throw in a little creativity, put a little bit of elbow grease in, and the best social media releases of each schedule. These are your top five. I'm going to go from 5 to 1. Number 5 with the best graphics, the most creativity, I think, was Minnesota United. They created a Monopoly board, and then they had the dice roll and the Monopoly piece moving to each space, which was their opponent. They then had a hilarious moment where it said 7 hours later, and they got to the end for decision day because Monopoly, you know, takes all day to play. So I appreciate that from Minnesota. And then the one before that, number 4, I'm going to go with RSL. They did a clip for each team from a movie. I highly recommend going to watch it, either hilarious GIFs or viral videos from those cities, or movie clips. Everyone really locks in on the I Love You Man for the Galaxy, where Paul Rudd goes to the game. Paul Rudd was in like 3 of these as well. So Paul Rudd's having a big MLS week, which makes sense.
Paul Rudd, a big Sporting Kansas City fan.
Yeah, yes. So him and Cameron have something in common because
I didn't even have to say that.
Down at Andrew and say, I love this too.
Do you think he'll cry with me? If I cry in that moment, do you think Paul Rudd will put his arm around me and say, oh, what a wonderful moment?
Paul Rudd lives for that exact moment. I think that's what he's made.
He's made a career off of that moment. Yeah, for sure.
Number 3, you have to go watch, is Chicago Fire. I think it may have arguably been the most creative. What they did was the whole team's in the hotel for preseason. They had the players go to each door, hand the players the card of what the game was. And you got to see a little bit of that personality of the teams. Why make a fancy graphic? You got players in a hotel with nothing to do. Walk around, bang on each other's door, and be really annoying. I appreciate that. Out of Chicago. Number 2 was probably the big budget one, which was FC Cincinnati. They took Queen's Gambit, of course, the biggest show of the year. They combined it with Queen City, And so in it, has everyone seen Queen's Gambit?
Yes. Great show. Okay. Love that
show.
So
they have her staring at the chessboard on the ceiling that she creates, and then it becomes a calendar, and the MLS teams that they're playing move to the proper dates of who they're playing. It was very well done.
And Cincinnati starting the season with a win.
Well, yeah. to be fair, their content has always been supporter shield level.
Yeah.
It's just that the product on the field has always been spoon level. So it's been tough.
I think you're going to expect this, but I think one of the sleepers of the social media game, maybe they shouldn't be a sleeper anymore, is FC Dallas. And they do it once again. You got to go watch this video. It's Eddie Manjoma literally doing that thing where you FaceTime someone and then tell them you'll call them right back. But he's doing it with the schedule to everyone on FC Dallas, and no one on the team knows it's coming. So it's literally him FaceTiming FC Dallas players and going, San Jose, August 7th. And they're like, what? And he's like, Saturday, August 7th, home, San Jose. And they're like, home now? And like, no one has any idea what's going on. Paxton Pomacle's eating, and he just goes, are there cameras around? Like, he finally figures out that it's a video. I think it was Thiago Santos who's like, home? You're home now? So it was a great video. It makes you laugh. You get to know the players. I think he also did Brian Reynolds and Brandon Cervagna, who were especially confused because who knows what hour it was for them when this went down. Tanner Tessman and Jesus Ferreira were unavailable, which makes sense considering they're there. So those were the top five videos. Everyone go watch them. They're all on Twitter. All those teams killed it. Special shout out, because I don't want to leave anyone out. Connor Lade crushed it for the Red Bulls. LAFC was the best dramatic one. They did a fake trailer with a bunch of like dramatic movie clips, people jumping out of planes. And DC probably did the best. We all live on Zoom and Microsoft, you know, Office now and all that stuff video for all of this. So those are the ones to go lock in on.
I want to just establish for anyone listening to this and, you know, who's been taken on this ride, this journey by David, we didn't ask him to do this.
No.
Literally nobody asked him to do this. And yet here he is, like the number eight, number six, just covering ground. You know what?
Every blade.
You go forward. I got this. I'll cover that run. Here we go. And of course, Anders is here creating content out of these are going on Twitter. We're going to put these on Twitter. We're going to tweet these out.
Did Megan have something to do with
Major?
Yeah.
Major.
She was the brains behind this.
Megan used to work music festivals a lot. And apparently the release schedule for a music festival is a big deal because that's when you see the artist. And so she was very specific on she needs to have a moment where she sees each game. So that was key in her top videos. Hence why she really liked FC Dallas, because it wasn't just fun and funny and you got to see them. But they actually said like August 7th, this game, because some of them, like the LAFC one, which was great, it's just on the last screen. Now, I said no one's pausing this video and putting in their calendar each game. But it was very important to her. So those were David and Megan's top five release videos.
I think Megan and David's, actually. I think Megan gets top billing. Uh-huh. As a scheduled release, you know, top billing matters quite a bit. So I think it's Megan.
She's the headliner, if we're going to put this in festival terms. Yes. And like, you know, Dave, we want to see you, but we're probably going to be there at like 2 p.m. It might be, like kind of muddy, a lot of people there, just a couple porta potties. So,
but I'll get those hardcore 30 fans who are like moshing to my music, which isn't the type of music it is, right in the corner at noon on the first Friday. That's the ones you want to be with.
And in like 5 years, we'll all be talking about it, and hopefully you'll be headlining, all right? All right, let's get to some more news out of the schedule release here, because there is big news. Seven teams in the playoffs per conference. That is, to me, probably the biggest news peg, because when I see the schedule come out, my thought is, you know, hype, excitement, you know, circle your calendar, all this stuff, yeah. But this is the basis of competition. The schedule is the basis of what the 2021 season is from a soccer perspective. And that is always the most important thing. And so for me, when I see seven teams in the playoffs, I am encouraged. And I know people complained last year was a weird year. You had to do it because everything was so bizarre and the scheduling was very, you know, Bruce Arena talked about it. It wasn't like for like, let's say. So you had eight teams out of 26 get in. That was almost 70% of teams in this league that got into the playoffs. And just looking through the years, that is the most it had ever been, unless you go back to 96-97, in which there were 10 teams, 80% got in, and 2002 to 2004, which was after the contraction down in Florida, again, 10 teams, 80% got in. That was the biggest number we had ever seen. The number this year is 51.9%, so just a shade more than half. That is the lowest percentage playoff teams of all time in MLS outside of the 2010 season, which was 50% dead on. So that is a, that to me, that's a huge step forward. And that also is paired with regionalization. And a lot of people are tweeting us about this, and everybody's saying this is one of the things that I don't really like about the schedule. And I'll tell you right now that I completely get it. Variety is the spice of life. We know that. Like, I want to see cross-conference games. I want to see interconference because it lets you test yourself against teams that you don't normally play against as much. It gives you those amazing road trip opportunities. It allows an LA team to go to Miami or to go to New York, and for you to have a date on your schedule that you say, you know what, family vacation, or, you know, if you don't have a family, I'm getting boozed up in X City. Like, I get that. I understand it. But let's also all take a step back and realize that we're not living in a perfect world right now. That as encouraged as we can be about the direction that our society is going when it pertains to the pandemic and COVID-19, we are not there yet. So when you look at this regionalization, and there are about 2 to 3 games per teams that are interconference, and if you look and really dig into it, most of those games are pretty clearly like marquee matchups. You know, whether that be the MLS Cup rematch that's out there, or you see some, you know, LA New York or LA Miami or whatever it is, the games that you see a lot on national TV to get to a bigger audience, that's why they're there. The rest of it, you're going to be in conference, you're going to have a lot of those games, and 3 times is the most times you're going to see another team. If you're Bruce Arena, you don't like that. If you're me right now, you're saying, that's the reality of 2021. That is what happens when you need to have same-day travel for obvious reasons. And we're all living through what those reasons are. We understand it. You have same-day travel, so you can't go cross-country and expect the product to be any good. You have to keep it pretty close to home. And the thing that I like about this is that it does, and it does make those playoff spots so much more important. It does make every game so much more important. And that's what we all want. Yeah, the old six-pointer, you know, quote-unquote cliche. But I don't think that is really that much of a cliche in this case, because to get the playoffs, you got to beat the teams repeatedly, by the way, that you're competing for those playoff spots with. There's no more where San Jose goes to Philly and they're like, Wednesday game, throw it away. Don't care. Philly, yeah. Those 3 points, you can have them. It hurts us a little bit, sure, but it doesn't hurt us in the sense that we're competing directly against you for a playoff spot. And I know people are going to say, hey, that's some spin on this. And it is a little bit of spin, but it's the sort of spin that actually goes into practice in the way that these teams, these coaches, these players, these clubs have to approach their schedule. They have to win games against the teams that they're competing against. So in that way, I like that. But I also like that it's my understanding, after speaking to a lot of people and sort of getting the lay of the land, that this is not a future of MLS thing, that this is not a forever thing. These are circumstances that we have to deal with. This is the best way to deal with them in order to reduce travel during a pandemic. This is the best way to sort of get us through 2021 with a normal schedule of 34 games and get to 2022 where we can get back to what we were doing before, ideally, which is 2 times against in-conference, and then the rest of your schedule goes inter-conference, and you get those road trips back. You get that time to test yourself against a team you don't normally see and certainly don't in the playoffs. So I know people are frustrated about this, but I would just encourage everyone to be thankful that we got to the point where we're at. You know, I wish we were New Zealand and we were all, you know, to go back to the music festival analogy, we were all at a music festival and not wearing masks and happy-go-lucky and carefree about it. But we are not at that point yet. And so just like in our personal lives, in MLS's life, there have to be ways to deal with that and ways to make it manageable. This is that way for 2021. Let's all just appreciate that we're going to have 34 games, 459 games. Doyle, I know you've got to like hydrate here because you're going to be watching a lot of soccer. Yes, put your head down because that's an intimidating number, 459. It's absurd.
But Weeby, just to follow up with you talking about the intensity, what matters, 7 playoff teams, New England would not have been in the playoffs last year. And they were an Eastern Conference finalist. Nashville was the 7th team in. So that shows you the quality that you're talking about that's making the postseason and how tough it's going to be. And the race, I think, in both conferences between like 6 and 11, that's how tight a lot of these teams are in that area, is going to be awesome to see. And as you said, that's going to be every single match day is these two teams are facing each other, and not only are they watching, all the fans of the teams around them are watching. Are Red Bulls playing Inter Miami? That means NYCFC is watching. DC's locked in. New England, well, probably not New England. Nashville's locked in. Because as you said, these games are going to be massive for those final few playoff spots. And you're going to have, I think, teams pretty much all in the postseason that could win MLS Cup, which wasn't the case once you got there last year. And that, to your point, shows like how big all of these matchups are going to be.
And look, Supporter Shield is going to be another conversation this year because of that. I still
remember. I'm going to butt in. It's not.
Okay. That's what I was going to say. So I'm glad you're saying it.
The team that comes out of the season with the most points deserves a Supporter Shield. Now, I remember last year around September, we kind of had this conversation, maybe October, we had this conversation on this show. And I was like, no, I don't know. Like it is more unbalanced than usual. And that does kind of impact it. And I was on the team like, okay, like maybe an asterisk or maybe whatever. And then, you know, Greg Vanney in particular made a good point. Jim Curtin ended up making a good point. Fans across the league made great points when that council decided not to award the Supporter Shield very briefly, that like putting an asterisk on it devalues the commitment and the effort that everybody put out last year in the midst of a global pandemic. And the same thing applies this year. So don't like, I'm not even going to entertain the Supporter Shield conversation for 2021. If anybody wants to have it, you go right ahead. I'll just put myself on mute and I'll take a little nap till you're done with that segment.
I you know, we have a Taquito signing here.
Taquito's going to fill in for me, actually.
Yeah, I'm feeling
early. This is a first half.
I feel like he was like, oh, wait, we're talking about the Shield again? I'm coming in here to scratch up whoever is going to devalue this thing. I'm with you. That's exactly what I was going to say. But I also think that it does make finishing atop the other conference, if you don't win the Shield, not Shield worthy, but an incredible accomplishment. Because you will have done so playing all of the teams in your conference repeatedly, just like every other team within your conference has done. So there will be that even playing field for you within conference, if you want to be really dogmatic about schedule. So that's interesting stuff there. Some dates for you as we talk about sort of getting to the playoffs. November 7th is decision day. November 19th, the playoffs begin. And December 11th is when they wrap up with MLS Cup. So those are big dates for you. In August, we have Heineken Rivalry Week. It's 10 days, two weekends. It's got, I mean, I had the whole list in front of me. I mean, it's I would go through it, but I don't have enough air in my lungs. You might be.
Can I just say one of
that,
the things I really like about Rivalry Week this year is, so Columbus Seattle, I think on national television, is the first weekend of that Rivalry Week as a replay of MLS Cup. I like the idea going forward of the rematch of last year's MLS Cup being part of this, because you feel, you know, the tenacity, the interaction between fan bases when something big like an MLS Cup happens. And then sometimes we lose it because those teams don't face off or they play at weird times when you can fit it in the schedule. So to make that a big game going forward could be a really cool way to connect those fan bases, to make those games meaningful. I mean, any team I've ever rooted for, the few years after you lose a championship, you hate that other team and you like actively watch to root against them. And so I think that could be a really cool part.
What team
forward.
Have you ever rooted for?
I'm like,
the Knicks lost to the Spurs in 1999. I hated the Spurs. We played them in 2000. We beat them in the regular season, and I was pumped. And the Mets have lost World Series, and that's it.
I'm rolling my eyes so hard right now because I came on this show and I was like, we should start the season with MLS Cup rematch. And you guys were like, stupid idea, bad idea, don't do that idea. And then now you're all in. But I appreciate
you
coming around.
Call it the whatever cup thing you wanted to call it.
I didn't have a name, I don't think.
Weeby, I'm natural, baby. It's cool. It's all light. It's all easy.
Yeah,
whenever we play,
gotcha.
We play. It's
gotcha,
fun.
Gotcha. You're forcing it, you're saying, and I'm just letting it come to me. Okay, fine. Yeah, How about I force some League's Cup on people? That's going down as well this summer, I believe. And then the Campeones Cup, which will be at the new Crew Stadium, which also brings us the fact that they're going to open three new stadiums. We talked about a lot of them, but we now have the date for the Crew. They're going to open against the Revs, and that is a perfect sort of poetic opening for them, because if you remember, and I don't because I wasn't following MLS at the time, but back when they opened, what is now historic Crew Stadium, it was against the Revs. And oh, by the way, the Revs and the Crew faced off in the Eastern Conference Final last year as well. So that's a really good full circle game. Excited for that
July 3rd on ESPN for that one. I think if there was one game on this schedule for me to circle this year, it would be that one, because I think those are two of the top teams in the league. And they both play really good, attractive soccer.
All right, let us know what you're circling.
Can I give you my circles?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
First week of August, I think it's August 4th and August 7th, 3 days apart, Austin plays Houston at home and Dallas away. So that whole rivalry gets going in literally 4 days, and you'd assume it's post-Copa America. So you've got Cecilio Dominguez, Rodney Redes, and anyone else. And so I think you're looking at a playoff push there for three clubs and them finally all facing off and becoming that connection that we're really looking forward to.
I'm going to circle May 9th, just because I think that our league still needs these big mainstream moments, obviously still needs them, and ABC has back-to-back games on that May 9th. Miami-Atlanta, which we don't yet really know what it could be or what it will be, and Portland-Seattle, which we are well aware of what that is and what it will continue to be. So I think those two back-to-back games on ABC, those are sort of like, you know, those are formational moments. So go to MLSsoccer.com. All the coverage is there. Tell us what you're circling on your calendar, whether it be for your team or for the league. We'd love to hear it. 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. We've talked a lot about this, and we've skipped out on our producer Anders' reminder of the day, which is that the U.S. national team plays Jamaica in, at this point right now, about 49 minutes or so. So we will not talk about that, obviously, on today's show. But good news, we have an entire show that's going to be dedicated to national team coverage dropping next week. It's going to be monthly. If it goes well, maybe even more than that. We're calling it Extra Time Club and Country, driven by Continental Tire. So look out for that next week in your feeds. It'll be on YouTube as well as wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll be going through every little nook and cranny of the international game as it relates back to North American soccer and MLS. So that could be Euros, because there are plenty of Euro participants in MLS. That could be Copa America, as you said, Dave. That could be Nations League. It could be Gold Cup. It could be the Olympics. It could be World Cup qualifying. Nay, it shall be all of them.
It could be my Christmas special about AFCON, which I've already created the Google Doc for. I've already got interviews going. I'm already excited about it. Also, shout out to Canada fans. It's like one of the biggest nights in Canadian soccer history. They opened World Cup qualifying against Bermuda. They've got that Olympic qualifying game against Honduras. Literally, I think they're back-to-back. So our heart goes out to you, because I couldn't handle that, and fingers crossed.
All right, let's get to it. Let's get to it. We'll start with Inter Miami, the first of our four previews on this day. And, of course, we start with a poorly constructed haiku from yours truly. Here it is for Inter Miami. David, Phil, and Chris, will trust bring better results? Talking sure didn't. Inter Miami's talked a lot. Had a lot to say about what they were going to be, who they were going to sign, the way it was going to go, their stadium, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of that has come to fruition.
Well, I mean, it wasn't really a haiku. He was just counting syllables. That's fine.
Come on. Just give me, I'm trying to write 27 of these. I was doing it with a baby on my lap. Like,
no one told you to do this, Weavy. You were the one who said, yo, we should do a haiku. I'll do it for every team. Then you text me. Also, our thoughts go out to Wyatt, Weavy.
Yeah, a little bit legend, under the weather today.
Legend
under
of the show. Weather, so. Can't wait for the day he goes to a sporting game and says, Dad, I love this too.
I can't wait for that either. Oh, my God. All right. Key signings. Actually, before we get to key signings, what did you make of sort of the message there? My message was that they don't have time to talk about it. They got to do it. And that's sort of what they've been saying from the beginning. But last year clearly didn't happen the way that David Beckham and the Moss brothers envisioned it, and that's why you saw a wholesale change when it came to the soccer side of the club. Phil Neville coming in as head coach, and Chris Henderson, now they're running sort of the soccer side of things. Will trust bring better results? Will that be the case this year? Is the foundation that they've laid here quickly good enough, Doyle?
It seems, well, no is my initial response, but it does seem like there are fewer cooks in the kitchen than there were last year. That last year's roster was kind of a Frankenstein, and then you had a coach who was probably their third or fourth pick, who had nobody's trust, trying to steer the ship. It just didn't work. With this one, there seems a little bit more clarity in terms of, like, Chris Henderson was obviously a guy that David Beckham knew, and wanted, and he has an amazing track record given what he did in Seattle. And Phil Neville was obviously a guy that David Beckham knew and wanted. And if you look at the types of players that they've brought in, you know, Kelvin Leerdam, Jovan Jones, Gregor was a target of the Seattle Sounders. Like, they almost signed him, I think, a couple years ago. Kieran Gibbs, 31-year-old veteran of the EPL. Ryan Shawcross, a little bit questionable with that one, given his age and, you know, his last 2 years, he's barely played soccer. But they all fit a mold of guys who are veterans and have done it at a good level. And it, they wouldn't be the first team to find a level of success going this way. And regardless, the clutter of having 15 different competing visions, which is what last year's team felt like, it feels like they have gotten away from that to a degree.
And I would say, and I said this on the show a couple of times, I think, I don't know if any team was hurt worse by the global reality of what 2020 was than Inter Miami, where I think it was a group that had an idea that they were going to make moves in the summer, that they weren't able to get some moves over the line because of the way the world shut down and all that. And so at a minimum, you look at a year in which you've got Blaise Matuidi in preseason, you've got Rodolfo Pizarro preparing to play in the position he's going to play in. You've got LGP from day one rather than midway through the season, who should be your stable starting center back. And you've got Gonzalo Higuain, who now has time up. Federico, Gonzalo.
Both.
I was going to do
that. They have both.
I know, but I knew I was going to do that, and then I got it right, and then I questioned myself. Damn it. But you've got him from preseason. So I think at a minimum, Inter Miami would have been better this year because they are an entity. And to Doyle's point, you had competing ideas coming in at competing times when you had no vision of what it was all going to look like. And so at a minimum, they were, I think they're going to be better this year. And then you have a guy in Chris Henderson who's won in this league, bringing in people that he trusts who know how to compete. And so I think Leerdam's an obvious upgrade. Jovan Jones struggled at times, but that's a player you trust in the locker room, as you said. And then Gregory, you're looking at a player who Seattle was willing to spend a DP spot on if they could get it done, coming in and stabilizing you in one of the most positions, one of the most important positions in MLS. So I think they're going to be better this year. I don't have a, they have to do this in 2021 for it to be a success, or this is what it has to look like.
But they seem to have that though. These moves are, we have to get this right now type of attitude. Are they not? I mean, almost everybody that we just named is over 30 years old.
I think so.
No, because I was
Shawcross, Leerdam, and
Ryan Shawcross is probably here on a minimum contract. I get it's an international spot, but like, you bring a guy in to set culture, whatever, off your bench. The only big signing they've made this offseason is Gregory, who's 26. So that, yeah, to fair. Me is less win now, and it's more.
Are we how sure? Can we? How are can we sure it's Gregory or is it Gregor?
No, I'm not sure at all. You okay. Would.
Gregore.
But, yeah, anyway. The Brazilian midfielder is the only one to me that's we're really putting our stake in here. And the other ones, especially free agent signings in MLS, are, well, what can we do now while we clean up our cap and figure things out going forward? And so I don't think they lock this team in. They are win now, but it's not win now and scrap the future. I think it's winning now smartly to reset the culture.
There is a win now on the star side, though. Because if you look at the stars, outside of Pizarro, you know, Higuain, Matuidi, if you put him in that. And by the way, there's still no resolution to the investigation that MLS is doing into that signing from last summer as well. That has to be mentioned in this conversation. But I don't have any more information than anybody else does on that one. So who is the star? It's got to be Higuain, no? Or is it Pizarro?
It's got to be the two of them. Like, you have a DP9 and a DP10. There shouldn't be any question about who the two best players on the team are. And Higuain, I thought he actually played pretty well for that super dysfunctional team. He didn't bring his finishing boots. He only scored one goal, and that was a free kick, which is funny because I don't think he scored a single free kick goal in his entire European career. That's the only goal he scored, but he didn't look washed. He just looked kind of lacking in sharpness and maybe a little bit unfit. Pizarro, I think, is a really, really good third wheel. Like, he's a guy who I think as like an attacking inverted winger would be really excellent. Miami's using him as a number 10. He's never been a high level chance creator. He's never been the guy who sort of pulls the strings in the way that we saw Bello Reynoso in Minnesota, or finishes plays off in the way that, you know, we saw Lucas Zelarayán in MLS Cup. Like, he doesn't, he didn't really show that last year. And for Phil Neville, I think a big part of the job is going to get Pizarro to a point where his skill set kind of amplifies the skill sets of the other attackers. And we didn't see much of that last year. And the question is, can he do that at all? Because we didn't really see much of that from Pizarro in Liga MX either. I think that's a huge sort of underlying question with an eye towards like the overall roster build. Like, can it work at a high level if these are the guys that you're betting on?
I think one of the positives for them last year is that they had a star turn that maybe people weren't expecting to in Lewis Morgan.
Lewis Morgan.
Hey, gotta get him in there, man, because he was probably their best player. Which was
he was one of the most productive chance creators in MLS.
Yes.
Yeah, there's no probably about it. He was clearly their best player and like a wonderful surprise. And you know, like Paul Areola-esque in his ability to play both sides of the ball as a winger and, you know, constant energy and taking people on and like a pretty good level of end product. And like with Lewis Morgan, like no notes after that season, like just come back in 2021 and do it again.
How about this? 2,222 player to watch. And I'm sorry to move us on, but we can't go Minnesota United on this one. Shout out the Loons who got 17 minutes. Well,
I'm going to actually butt in. Just say this one quick thing. I'm not sure of anything yet, and I'm still talking to people and trying to figure it out. But we talked about it, I think, with Austin. There is a chance where you play, I'm going to switch to Gregor now. Thank you, Doyle. Mm-hmm. As a six and basically two eights with Matuidi and Pizarro, where you're taking off the individual, hey, Pizarro, you have to create out of nowhere, because what he's best at is connecting. Or if you look at Phil Neville's team at the Women's World Cup, they had Jill Scott, who was basically the like make hard runs out of midfield and be a second forward at times. I think those are roles Pizarro could fit comfortably in. So there is space for Phil Neville to do that. Sorry.
No, that was a great note. Young. I'm very happy to let you jump in on that one. We get to Matheus Pellegrini, who was a little bit anonymous. Mm. Last year, despite a very large price tag, and Julian Carranza, you could put in that same boat. I mean, you put Robbie Russell in that same, or Robbie Robinson in that same boat as well. But the 2,222 player to watch is Matheus Pellegrini, I think, for us. Feel free, Doyle, to wrap any of those other guys in. Who are you watching on this team from a young player perspective?
I think Pellegrini, because he had the largest price tag, and he is the DP, though that might be fungible with the new rules that are apparently coming in. And he's the biggest question mark, because after watching this kid play 1,000 minutes last year, I have no idea what position he is. Mm. He doesn't move off the ball the way that you'd expect from an attacking winger. And he doesn't seem to have the chance creation ideas that you would expect out of a number 10. He reminds me a little bit of Barco in that way, in that like he's clearly got skills. But it's tough to figure out where to best use him to sort of unlock those skills. And like, there's a danger with him that maybe he's just a really good five-a-side player and he can't impact the entire field. And when you're spending that kind of money, you want a guy who could impact the entire field.
All right. The This Is Fine meme, the dog drinking coffee, was last year. We already kind of know what that is. Higuain doesn't fire. The team is in disarray. There's no real direction to it. They finished 10th outside of the playoff field, and they got to look back at this again and say, well, so our second crack at it didn't work, and we didn't have the training wheels of 2020 that allowed us to sneak into the playoffs, which wasn't good enough for us anyway, which is why we cleaned house. So that, I think, is pretty clear. Prediction time. Can Ryan Shawcross do a job? Can he go to Houston and I guess he won't be going to Houston, but can he go somewhere really hot and humid in August and perform?
How about Fort Lauderdale?
Yeah, that's true. He'll be used to the rain. He will be not. He not will won't be used to the humidity. Let's say not like that in Stoke-on-Trent or wherever.
I don't think this is a playoff team. That's my prediction.
We're talking top seven. For
I know.
Playoffs.
I know. Now we have the parameters. We didn't have the playoffs playoff parameters before, so it was easy just to sort of like put a really positive spin on things and like whitewash things a little bit. I tried to do my top teams in the Eastern and Western Conference. I got it right here. It's blank except for the only I have RSL 13th in the West. Apologies, RSL fans, but I don't know. I don't think it's a playoff team at seven. I just don't.
Yeah, I agree as well. I still think they're better than last year. I think you'll see improvement. I think they'll be more fun to watch. I think you'll be able to see the direction of where they're going over the course of this year. But I don't have them improving basically what would be four spots to get into the playoffs.
All right. Let's keep it moving. That's Inter Miami. Let us know if you disagree, Miami fans. I'm sure a lot of you will. Nashville SC, they were a playoff team, and under the 7-team rule, they would be in this year as well. Here is your haiku for Nashville SC. Let me just go find it real quick. Scroll. All right. Don't park, sell the bus. Good enough is so last year. Goals. Show me the goals. I liked that one. I thought it was okay. No? Okay. Fine.
No, I didn't. I mean, it was...
Doyle, you eye-rolled and shook your head. We both saw it.
So I'm starting to eye-roll at the parking the bus thing. Because if you look at the way Nashville played the final month of the season, and then even into the playoffs, like, they took it to Miami and they took them apart. So I feel like that is a better indication of who Nashville are and certainly who they want to be as a team than the first 15 games of their MLS existence. So I think that you're right, though. They have to build on that, and they have to show that they have, you know, more ways to win consistently. That is a huge question, going from can they use the ball at all to can they use the ball to win week after week after week. And a lot of that is going to come from asking more of the back line. Walker Zimmerman had an incredible year last year, defensively and on set pieces. And now, okay, can you do the type of distribution work that Matt Hedges does for Dallas, that, you know, we've seen some of the best, you know, Matt Beasley did for a decade for Sporting Kansas City? That is the next level for Walker Zimmerman, and it becomes the next level for Nashville.
I actually don't think it's on the back line. And I'm going to disagree with you on that. And I go to something that I was reading, and also just when you observed them play last year, when they did drop back, because they did. And Dave Romney was saying that one of the things, the habits that we're trying to break this preseason, that Gary Smith is really sort of like driving into us, is don't revert and don't sort of have that safety blanket of pulling numbers back and getting super compact. And you even heard last year when we had opportunities to hear Gary Smith give directions on the field, him screaming, push up, push up, push up. I think collectively they have to find a way to be a team that plays further up the field, that's a little bit more compact, not packing their own end, but where the ball is being played so they can put pressure on teams. Because there were a lot of times last year where they were content to just say, we're actually just so good organizationally that we don't need to be a team that puts pressure on you. And that, you're right, that did change later on in the year. I just want to see if it can change over 34 games when they're playing the same teams over and over and over, who figure out how to either break them down or what they're trying to do. Can they be, what's the right word? Can there be enough variables that you can't look at Nashville and say, I know what you're going to do, you're predictable. And mm-hmm. and in your predictability, I know what your safety blanket is. So if I put you under pressure, I know what you're going to do, which is drop back into that shell. If they can get out of that mindset, which I hope they can, and I think that they're saying all the right things about, I think things will change. But we shall see. Big signings, Rodrigo Pinheiro, the Uruguayan winger, CJ Sapong up top. They now have a number 9 depth chart that's like 6 long. Cadiz, Rios, Sapong, Baji, Dunlady. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Somebody's got to score the goals. What's the star spotlight? Who is the star, Dave?
Well, Walker Zimmerman is the star of this team because he's the best player and the most important piece on this team. I guess the thing that elevates them is Hani Mukhtar for this group, because you guys talked about everything you said, and I don't totally disagree, but I think to me what elevates this team is if they're lethal in transition. And when you see Gary Smith talk about last year and working with this group, everything was a reference to Atleti and what Diego Simeone's group does. And to me, what they do best in the world is the first two passes when they win the ball. Everyone knows exactly where it's going, and it's always in the right spot to open into transition. And I don't know that everyone in the attacking core fits this, but for Mukhtar, he is at his best when the game is open. And so he needs to be making the right decisions at full speed. He needs to be in the right spot to pick up the ball. And so he has that potential to, I think, be a killer this year in the way they need him to. Whether it's a 10 or the wing, it doesn't matter, because I still think his skill set fits those openings and those opportunities.
So you don't think it matters whether they use him as a 10 or as a winger?
Not really, because again, you want him to be the first or second pass out of the back line to carry the ball forward, to run at the last defender, And at that point, you make the decision. Do you take them on? Do you lay it off to Cadiz or whoever's running off you? So I think if he's playing from the left side, he's going to pinch inside anyway under Cadiz. If he's playing as the 10, it's going to be a similar position for him.
How do you see them creating chances, Doyle? Because I'm just looking at their depth chart right now. And we saw Randall, we saw Leal score a goal for Costa Rica. He had moments, especially later on in the year. But a lot of times we're like, oh, where is the final product? But first year, young guy, when we spoke to him in preseason, it seemed pretty clear that it might take him a little time to just to transition and be comfortable. How do they create chances? What's the best case scenario?
Well, I think David's right that transition is going to be maybe defining for this team. They're not going to play the type of soccer that the Crew do. They're not going to play the type of soccer that we saw from the Revs in the playoffs when Carlos Heel got back. They are going to be a little more direct and a little bit more about getting into those open spaces. And then Leal and Alex Mouil, who was very, very good for them after they signed him. And then in both Cadiz and especially Daniel Rios, they have an attacking front three that is super energetic. That is, I would say high pressing, though I don't think we'll see a ton of that for them. But like if you put them in a well-drilled mid-block and you play for those transition moments, those guys will create turnovers and they will find space. And I think that is going to be their bread and butter. And then can Mukhtar elevate his game as a part of that? And then the other big question is like, okay, we know that Dax McCarty and Anibal Godoy, when they win the ball, they can hit those passes. Dax is one of the best we've ever had in this league at sort of playing across his hips and into those pockets of space that allow his attackers to turn and go. What happens when one of those guys is gone for the Gold Cup, picks up an injury, just has to sit because of squad rotation? Does the whole thing bog down? And that's why, you know, to bring it all back, I do think it ends up going to the back line and saying, can we get more out of Romney and Walker Zimmerman and maybe young Jack Maher as well?
You're saying the pass to create those transition moments.
As soon as the ball is lost, and David hit it dead on. It's the Diego Simeone school where it's like your first two passes are scripted and all the movement from the players who are off the ball is scripted. Everyone has to react in concert to those turnovers. That's how teams that are, you know, maybe less talented than the elite teams in the world, that's how they win games. And then we've seen it for a decade from the Atletico Madrid team. And we saw a lot of that, I think, last year from Nashville. And there's levels to this. You know, you could always be better at what you're already good at.
They don't have a 22-22 player to watch, really.
They do.
Who?
It's Jack Maher.
Yeah, I think it's Jack Maher.
Oh, okay.
He was the number two pick ahead of Daryl DK.
I don't know.
Yeah,
how to say
now I threw myself off when Doyle said it right before. He was the number two pick. Can I do my on fire meme right now?
Sure, go
as
for
part
it.
Of this?
So technically, he's not 22 under 22 eligible.
That's what I'm saying.
He turns 22 10 days before the season.
And Rodrigo Pinheiro turns 22 on May 5th.
Got it. So well, can we count him anyway?
Yeah, they're 22 under 22 adjacent.
Yeah, yes. But so the meme on fire is in the middle of the summer. Alistair Johnson's with Canada. Walker Zimmerman's with the U.S. Maybe Daniel Lovitz is with the U.S. because you've got a lot of camps. Anibal Godoy's with Panama. Randall Leal's with Costa Rica. Yonder Cadiz goes to Copa America. It's amazing because it's a very domestic-based team. They could lose a lot of internationals. And so you're talking about, well, you're not worried about the back line? Well, what if two or three of them aren't there? What if Joe Willis sneaks his way into, you know, a call-up as well for the one of 8,000 U.S. games that's going to be played? You've got World Cup qualifying in September, and you've got a Godoy who needs to play in these, you know, early stages for Panama, and then maybe again later. So that is the fear for this group. And then the question is who steps up in those big moments, because they were a pretty cohesive unit through most of last year. They didn't really pull guys in and out of that starting 11. And so that's where you look at a young center back that gets an opportunity. You're talking about that forward depth. You're asking what Pinheiro can bring year one, when really none of the international guys stepped up to their level last year in their first year. So that's the fear, I think, for Nashville, in my mind, is they were so clean with their minutes last year. They knew exactly who they were going to play, and they could lose a lot of pieces for segments of this year.
Yeah, you know what? Bring the bus out of storage. That's just a joke. I'm sorry. That's a joke. It's a joke. I won't make those jokes anymore. Actually, I can't promise that. But that's where you go. The Alex Mawil and Hadwala Bawana experiment, baby. Bring them on. They're hungry. We had a great email that we've hit a lot of here, and I hope that he's happy about it. I don't have a name here, Dave. Do you remember?
Yeah, it's Chris Hole.
Okay. Oh, yeah, Chris Hole. Yeah.
Who's awesome. But let me read this quote that he said, because you bring up Mule. Alex Mule and Bawana, local kids who left the teams they grew up with, Red Bull in Seattle, to get a shot. Dave Romney gave this interview about working through his feelings of deep frustration left over from only ever getting inconsistent minutes at LA and then succeeding at becoming the only field player to play every minute of every game for Nashville SC in 2020. And that's what you're talking about. This opportunity for these players to finally get a place to be the guy, to get the minutes that they feel like they've always deserved. And if this is a year where other pieces are away for international duty, it's a huge opportunity for Bawana. I think Mwil showed last year what he could be for this group. He's in the top 12, 13 options for this team week in and week out. He probably starts a ton of games even when everyone's healthy over some of the international guys. But there's an opportunity for other pieces that have knocked around the league at times, yeah, you know, to get their starting spot and find their place.
Wednesdays will be that too. All right, it's prediction time. They were seventh last year in the East. Do they do better than that? Do they equal that? Doyle, what's your quick playoffs or no playoffs prediction here for Nashville?
I think they're right on the line. I think they're right around seventh in the East, and I'm not brave enough to make an in or out prediction at this point.
I'm fine with that from Doyle. I have them eighth in my rankings, which I've done way too early. So I have them same as him, right around the conversation, competitive throughout, but maybe not as good as the teams ahead. Who knows what happens?
You know what? I'm going to go into the playoffs, but if they make it, it'll be sixth or seventh. See how I just hedged my bets there. I said in, but then I said, but if. I'm just going to say it. Since you guys went on either side and nobody took that brave stand, Nashville SC, you are a playoff team on my empty
kiss of death.
Yes, on my empty card that has literally nothing
on it. Sorry, guys. Call it a season.
Yep, that's it. Pack it up. Pack it up. All right, Vancouver Whitecaps season preview. Here is your the haiku for this one. I'm getting nervous about these now. A 10 is one thing. How about some consistency? No playoffs? Then what? Now, I say no playoffs, then what? Because it's been three straight years without the playoffs.
That one was really, yes.
You like that one? Okay. Yeah. I thought that was my weakest of the four today. So I'm happy about this.
Weeby, that's the thing about art. It's in the eye. You never know what's going to land and what's going to hit. Everyone always says the hit songs are ones they did in a recording they didn't even remember. And then the ones they thought were hits never go anywhere.
Yeah. You know, you always say critics are idiots. So here we go. It's been 3 years without the playoffs for this team. And I say a 10 is one thing because we're still talking about that. We still don't have the 10, though they keep talking about it. But the consistency is another, and doesn't look like that 10 is going to come. But there is some control here for Mark Dos Santos, which is he can figure out what his best team is. He can figure out what the right approach is for this group of players. He can give them that foundation to sort of launch off of, and they really just haven't launched. And I'm not just talking about the last 3 years. I'm really, I think, more talking about overall in MLS. It's a team that just has never sort of pushed on in a way. There's always been a level of uncertainty with them. Some big signings in the offseason. Bruno Gaspar in. Caio Alexandre is in. He's the number 8 out of Brazil. What a name that is. Diver Caicedo is in. So they now have that winger situation pretty much set. Of course, Lucas Cavallini was the big signing last year. I mean, they parked the tank in front of BC Place to announce that one. What do you think about this year for Mark Dos Santos, Doyle? What does he need to do? What does he need to prove? And how does that job relate to what the Caps will be?
He needs to prove that he can get a team to play consistent soccer, because the last 2 years, and Grant, there are some caveats here, because 2019, he was taking over his first year, taking over a pretty broken team, and 2020 was a COVID year. But regardless, from week to week, we didn't see consistent improvement. We didn't even see consistent lineups and formations and principles of play. Like, the Caps would be a pressing team 1 week, and the next week they would be a bunker team. They'd play in a, you know, 3-6-1 and then a 4-3-3 and a 4-2-3-1. It was all over the place. And so we would see good indications, and then the Caps would just go away from that, from what was working, for a month, and they would never build on it. And that's been the story of I mean, really more than, like you said, it's more than the last 2 years. It's this team's MLS existence. They've just never built from strength to strength. And this roster is not the best in the league, but it's actually a pretty good roster, minus that glaring hole at the number 10. And they should be able to build something that is at the very least recognizable week after week and consistent in how they go out there and apply their principles of play. And obviously they're not going to be one of the favorites. And I think are at this point, probably a stretch to be considered even a playoff team, but they can build towards that. And that is the biggest test this year for Mark Dos Santos in particular.
What signings do you like, Dave?
Pretty much all of them. What they've gone out and done, I actually think over the last year or so has been pretty good. You saw flashes from Christian Dahomey last year. He's not a consistent attacking piece. So now you bring in Dibert Casado on the other side, who you want to be a player who wants to take guys on, pull defenders out of the play off the other wing. And now you've got some threats on both sides to open up space for Cavallini. The 10 really does matter in how all of this matches up, but they've stated that they're going to do it and they've been pretty consistent about working on it. And that's one of those positions where, again, like a number nine, you get what you pay for. So you want it to be right rather than done quickly, because that's kind of the what a lot of this is built on. But Lucas Cavallini last year, it was a terrible year for him. He didn't go to the bubble. He had a lot of issues with COVID, his family, all the things. He scored 6 goals in 16 starts. If you double that and give him a full season, that's not bad production for a guy who had a miserable year and you're expecting more from him. And I thought when he was on the field, you saw a little bit of direction to the way they could play. I really like the matching, the pairing in central midfield between Alexandre and Baldissimo. Baldissimo sitting deeper, able to play those long balls. Alexandre covering the ground alongside him, similar to what you're seeing with the U.S. Olympic team with Ewell and Dotson and the way those pairings fit. And they've got a young back line with experience at fullback now on both sides that can get forward and attack. So there's a lot of pieces, I think, to like in what they can do. And you also, I think, have to look at, for Axel Schuster from top down, just the comments and the way they've gone about planning this year. They're going to go to Utah. They have an idea of bringing family with them, making it easier for their players, where they're going to live. They've thought everything out in a way in which I think it's different for this club. I think it's an improvement on just the thought process and the organization in Vancouver, which is all positive going forward. So the hope is they get some momentum and results to go along with that, because it's going to be a miserable year for all the Canadian teams again, where you don't have to question Mark Dos Santos, so that they can build on this going forward. And there's not, well, we don't know who the coach will be, so do we want to spend on this 10 if it's his guy and not our guy and all of that? And I think there's a potential for this group to put together some good performances. They were two spots out of the playoffs last year, and that was with living in Portland, but not, and flying back and forth and all those things. And I think there's a chance for an improvement this year from them.
There is, but let me just say this. The underlying numbers said that Vancouver were worse than their record for the second year in a row. And the underlying numbers in 2020 were in line with their underlying numbers in 2019. And so that's why, like, I agree with you. There are mitigating circumstances for all three of the Canadian teams last year. And there are going to be mitigating circumstances again, but when that stuff is the same year after year after year, there is something structural at issue.
How would a 10 change the structure?
So that was one of the things I was going to ask, like which type of number 10 makes sense for them, because they were linked to Lucho Acosta. I think they were actually going after Lucho Acosta, and he's more of a second forward, right? He's not a string puller. I look at this team with Dahomey and Caicedo and Cavallini. I want them going into space. I want a through ball artist, someone like Nico Ladero played, how he played when he first got here, or obviously Babelo Reynoso last year. I want someone who is comfortable dropping a little bit deeper and helping to defend and orchestrate the game, not necessarily a second forward. And I think the way that a number 10 like that would function is by making them more stout defensively through central midfield, and second, making them much more dangerous in transition.
And I think it's one of those groups where I think you said about Pizarro, like if he's the third best player, these are a lot of players who, if there's someone else, I think they'll be really dangerous, but it's really going to be hard for them to be the guy. I don't think Caicedo and Dahomey are those players or Cavallini, but you bring in a legit number 10, it just makes everyone's life easier. It makes you relax more. And you mentioned Lucho Costa. The other rumor was Ottavio, who would just be elite at everything. If he had come to MLS, I mean, it's a Champions League starter on Porto that Milan and Arsenal were going after. He just would have been awesome. So they've been on both ends of that range, and they've gone for a lot of different things. I agree with Doyle in the style that I would want from that player. I think you want someone who you play through, who controls the pace of game, and the verticality and the transition comes from the athleticism of those other three players and their style. But again, I think anything would be better than nothing, because right now I literally have that spot blank on their roster. So I don't know who they start there if they go into the season tomorrow. It's probably Russell Tyler.
I'm a little bit less on the Reynoso style, just because I'm not sure. I think that whoever they get at the 10 needs to have some goals in them, because I don't know that Caicedo, Dahomey, and Cavallini are going to be elite in that sense. And I think, again, transition might be their best spot. So I just keep thinking Diego Valeri. In my mind, is there a sort of player of Valeri's ilk who just kills people in transition, has the passing, but also is thinking, I want my shot. I want to be in the opportunities to follow Cavallini's run into the box. I want to be the guy that peels off and whose movement is so good that the service from Caicedo and Dahomey, which I started, I can finish off. But look, that's the dream, right? Everybody wants Diego Valeri. They don't have him. And all their rumors seem to be petering out. We got to keep moving here. The "this is fine" meme has played out the last 3 years for them. It's a no playoff team.
We didn't do the 22 under 22.
Okay. Michael Baldissimo. I know he's your guy. Roll it.
Yeah. Is he because now I don't know anyone's age. I don't know when any of this crosses
he's
over.
I'm pretty sure he's age eligible. Let me Google it real quick. But he's a really, really excellent sprayer of the ball. He has incredible passing range. He is something of a turnstile defensively. If he can't figure out how to be a defensive net plus in central midfield, it's going to be a struggle for him to get onto the field. So he has a very clear path to playing time if he addresses this one particular issue.
The other player who I probably isn't eligible, because who knows what, again, I don't know how this works. I like Theo Bear, and I think he's unique, and I think he does a lot of things well. And you're seeing it sort of with the Olympic team. He's not super goal dangerous yet, and so it's hard to get him in the game, but he likes to connect. He sees the game well, whether it's on the wing or at center forward. So I'm excited just to see, because I think this is his best spot, being the fourth guy in at any of those spots along the front three.
The actual 22 under 22 is Diver Caicedo. They're really high on him. They went out and they spent money on him. He's already got like 4,000 or 5,000 pro minutes, and he's a starter.
We should just do a birth date episode for
a
little while. Weeby, did we lose you?
No, yeah, a little bit here because I was Googling furiously. Theo Bear is 22 under 22 adjacent. So he's not quite. Okay. He's not quite. But David Caicedo is the right call. We've talked about him. What's the prediction? Playoffs or no playoffs, and how close, if not?
No playoffs. I think they will be in it up until the final 4 or 5 games of the season. But I just think the West is too tough, and there are still too many questions about how this team's going to play.
I don't have them as a playoff team either.
Yeah, I have them improving from last year, but I still have them outside of the top 7.
Their saving grace could be, as we've said over and over and over, is that the back end of the schedule is really loaded. That gives them the opportunity, if they can't get it done in this window, to go into the summer and get the 10 that they keep talking about. Mm-hmm. So there is there's a scenario here where it's not all doom and gloom. It's not a nightmare. It's not a catastrophe. If this doesn't happen right now, it could happen this summer and they could be okay. We shall see. Let's get on now to the Colorado Rapids. Their haiku, the young.
Can I throw one thing in? Sorry.
Damn, now I just gave away my first two words.
Nice. It's one of two MLS stadiums I've never been to. So if this all ends and I'm allowed to, I'm going to a Whitecaps game this year. If they're home, they've got fans, I'm allowed to travel, it's all going down.
We're going together. I'll get a babysitter or something to help Mindy out, because I know she'll be angry
at me. No, don't get a babysitter, because Cameron has to come with us and look down at me and say, Dad, I love this too.
Uncle? I'll give you, you know what? I would give you guys uncle status. Not going to lie. All right. Colorado Rapids. The young and restless. They're the butt of jokes. No more. Promise must pay off. This feels like the year where the promise and the progress and all these sort of building blocks that they've been accumulating and fitting together, and now they have Robin Fraser fully engaged with years, or not years, a little bit more than a year under his belt. I mean, this feels like the year for it to pay off, and I look at their roster and I look at what they've done and I like it. And I think that this is a playoff team, and not just based on hope, not like, oh, I really hope that they get there, based on what they did last year and what they did after Anthony Hudson departed. So I think this is a year for the Colorado Rapids to sort of put a flag in the ground and say, you know, we may not have the big stars. We may not have the number nine that you guys all look at and say, oh my God, that's a 15 to 20 goal scorer. We may not be the team that is super sexy in a like star power way, but from top to bottom, our depth, our ideas, our project is rock solid, and we've been building to this point, and now it is here, and now it is time for us to perform.
I got thrown off. You called me sexy. It was a whole thing.
Wait, what?
I think I agree with you for the most part. I think, to me, the big thing I want to see this year is not just performing when your backs are against the wall and no one believes in you. And they came out last year. I think we talked about it. Who's getting dived?
Yeah, that's a bad sign.
Let me mute. Sorry.
I thought it was Weebies. I was worried it was a tornado watch.
No.
I didn't know what those sirens were, but I guess he's already in the basement. But with last year, I mean, Weeby, how many times on this show did we have someone on going into MLS's back and we're like, the Rapids are the sleeper, the Rapids are the sleeper. And yeah, that was a tough situation and no one knew what was going to happen, but they came out and they really rolled over. And then they were poor for a lot of the season until they had the games off, they backs against the wall, and then they started to perform. Same as you said, after Anthony Hudson left. Now I want to see from week one, can you put together week-to-week performances where you can dictate the play sometimes, where you can decide how games are played, and you're showing that level of consistency. It's young players and a young team, and that's one of the things that's always a struggle for young players. So can you elevate there? Because I still think there's talent in this group to do some of the things you talked about, to get the goals, to create opportunities. I'm not as worried about that. It's more just, from week to week, can this be a team that can consistently compete in a similar way? And I think that would be pretty exciting to see from this squad.
I will add on top of that is, can they be hard to play against? Because Colorado could, when they get on the ball and they spread you out, they are fun and they play really, really good and effective attacking soccer. And they have guys who, you know, whether it's Rubio dropping off the line as kind of a false nine, or Nomly playmaking from the wing, or Bassett making those delayed runs, scoring goals in the box. Like, it's dope, and it looks really, really good. But then you go the other way, and it's like they don't even put a body on you in midfield. You know, there's not a lot of, oh, man, this team is going to make you grind it out. And they need to have some of that in them, especially because that's a way to – sort of weaponize their home field advantage.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand, like, it's kind of regressive what I'm saying, but like, Columbus has that. Columbus absolutely has that, and they use it at times, and you need to have at least some of that if you're going to win things. I mean, Philadelphia had that, a ton of that last year. They still played good soccer. They still had exciting young attacking players, but they were miserable to play against for good chunks of that season. Colorado don't really have that yet. And I do think it starts, to me, that starts with their attackers. It has to be Lewis and Rubio and Nomly and Michael Barrios, if he's, you know, I expect him to play big minutes as well, and Bassett and Kellen Acosta. Like, those guys have to leave cleat marks on people. They have to. It can't be all easy build-ups against this Colorado team.
Here are your key signings. Philip Mayaka through the super draft. Michael Barrios, of course, over from FC Dallas. They signed a bunch of homegrowns. They made the Yarbrough in goal signing permanent. But there is a lot of continuity with this team. There is not a star. We know that. We've discussed it on this show. The Colorado Rapids.
Would you say that the team is the star?
You know what? We're almost at cliche point with that. Yunus Nomly might be the star. Yunus Nomly's numbers when it came to like dribbling and successful dribbling were elite in MLS. But too often, and this is just my opinion, I know this is not universally shared, too often he wasn't the guy in the final third. Like, there wasn't production coming off of how dynamic he can be. So he came in the league. look, you give that first year sort of not a mulligan. I don't think he needed a mulligan. But then you say, okay, there's a little bit more expected of you now. And the expectation is that you'll show that in goals and assists, more likely assists. And I want to see that. But I don't know that there is a star, and I think that's sort of intentional.
Yeah, but doesn't Cole Bassett have to be the star? After what we saw last year from him when he got into that starting lineup, I think he had 5 goals, 5 assists in 1,100 minutes. And after what we saw from Brendan Aaronson with when given that expanded role with Philadelphia, that's the path. And it is in front of Cole Bassett at this point to take that path up, you know, hopefully guiding Colorado up the standings in the West and then to a big European move to, you know, a team like RB Salzburg, like Brendan Aaronson did. He's got to be that star. He's their number 10. Like, I know that Nomley's their playmaker, but like Bassett's their number 10.
No one else in this midfield for Colorado would start for Philly, right? So there is that difference of the quality Brendan Aaronson was playing with. I agree with you, Doyle, that he has the potential to be that, and I think he should be on a similar pathway than Brendan Aaronson. But to Weeby's point, I think it's going to look different and feel – he's not going to be best 11 this year. They were fifth last year in the West. Are they going to be that much better in the standings? Are enough people going to vote for him for best 11? Like, it's just not going to happen. And so that doesn't mean that that shouldn't be the strive, but again, I still think that this is one of the most even teams across their starting 11, maybe top 13. And that is what the quality for this team should be. And yeah, you want big individual games from a guy like Cole Bassett. Jonathan Lewis as well. I think this is a big year for him. And this it's been a poor Olympic qualifying. And yeah, weaponize either what you do well to a great extent or do more things well and be more dangerous more often. I'm still in on Nomley because I give everyone 2 years from overseas and I like watching guys dribble. So I'm here for it. And I like the false nine, Diego Rubio, you know, being shifty, coming back away from goal and creating for your wingers. And let's be real, Michael Barrios probably going to score 12 goals this year off the bench because he's going to love it. So there's potential for all of that there, but I still don't think we walk away. I don't think we get into the playoffs this year and you say, X, this is the guy. If you stop for Colorado, you're going to beat them in this postseason game.
Isn't their star spotlight that we've been doing and their 2022 kind of the same thing? Which, to go what you were saying, Doyle, which I completely agree with, it's not just Cole Bassett that has to make a leap like that for this team to be sort of in that top three or four in the West, if that's where they want to get to. It's him. It's, as you said, Dave, Jonathan Lewis. Like, it is time. It is time, Jonathan Lewis. Like, the inconsistency side of your game, you've got to start to eliminate that if you want to be the player that we all think that you have the ability to be. Sam Vines appears to be on that path, but Sam Vines needs to be one of the best outside backs in the league. He needs to be a chance creator from that position. Austin Trusty, rinse and repeat. It's the same thing for you as well. We know what they have in Lalas Abubakar. We know what Drew Moore is. We hope that Courtney Ford can make his way back, but it's you, Austin. They spent a bunch of money on you. Like, it's time to take that step forward. I mean, there are all these young guys in this squad, and those four in particular, and you might be able to rope Kellen Acosta in, though he wouldn't be 2,222 eligible, where you're just saying, like, if we want to be that team, if you want to be that player, then you just got to be it. Like, this is the time to do it. So to me, their 2,222 and their star spotlight kind of come together. Could Cole Bassett be sold this year? Jeremy Young hit us up and said that he will be for $5 million this summer. It's not a question. He did want more Cole Bassett time. Yeah.
Is that a guarantee? I think the Raptors are explicitly about trying to develop and sell players like Cole Bassett and Sam Vines from their academy. And they've done a good job of getting other players like Kellen Acosta, who of course was a Dallas homegrown, and trying to create a market there. A couple of the players that they signed this offseason, like Michael Edwards was a DC United homegrown, Dantu Matoria was a Red Bulls homegrown. They signed two other homegrowns. They want to sell their players. And so it's incumbent upon the entire team to sort of buy into that. Because if you are playing good enough to get that type of money for those players, it means you're winning a lot of games.
There are a bunch of questions here about whether they need a true number nine. We've had that conversation. They're not going to do it. That's not what they think this team needs. They got Rubio Shinashiki. Their winger depth is absurd. I don't know how they're going to get like young DP Brian Galvan on the field or Benazee on the field. I mean, there are a lot of bodies here. So it'll be interesting to see how Robin Fraser
is going
to
be sitting right here.
Yeah, balances all this. This is fine. I think is pretty clear. The young players don't take the big step forward. The likes of Nomly and Acosta and Rubio, et cetera, don't perform, and they take a step back, and you're saying, well, darn it, this seemed like a team that was crescendoing, and now they're fading a little bit. What is the prediction, though? I feel good that this is a playoff team. I would say 7-4 seed for them, and probably more in the 5-6-7 zone.
Anywhere from 5-10. I could see it going really well, and I could see it going really, really poorly, just because, like I said, they're not that hard to play against. If they don't find that, then teams this year will cut through them.
I think that Robin Fraser, now that he's got the year, listen, what they've been waiting for, I think, is to play teams at home consistently. Like, you had the chaos of last year. This should be the toughest away game of the year. At altitude, you're coming in day of the game, and this is a young team that should be able to run all day. So they should have one of the best home away splits in MLS. And I think that's enough, even if some guys don't take the step we think, to be in the playoffs. So I have them as sixth, fifth, if it's a good year.
All right. There it is. We are not going to have time for the mailbag. I can already tell that Anders is going to push me off that, but we have to make time to get this done. The David Goss top five. Ooh. Number 10s in Major League Soccer, starting at number one, because we've decided that that is the best format for these. What do you got for us, Dave?
Number one is Nico Lodero. You can pick your reason why. I think everyone will agree. It's the longevity he's done it in this league. It's the different players he's done it with. It's that he can be one of the best chance creators in this league and will help you defensively and will help you press and will cover ground and will play deeper if you need him to for a game and will fly to Uruguay and then come back and do it, you know, on 2 days rest and in big games. So Nico Lodero is number one. Number two and three on my list, I reversed accidentally, so I'm going to fix it right now in my head. Number two has to be Alejandro Pozuelo. He won MVP last year. He was able to keep everything together for Toronto in a year of chaos. He is, I think, one of the most complete attackers in MLS. He doesn't have pure natural speed, but everything else, he can beat you on the dribble. He can create for his teammates. He can finish with both feet. He's creative in the way that he sees the game. He's able to pull players out of position and set his teammates up as well. I think it's going to be another big year from him. And then number three is MLS Cup winner and tattoo artist Lucas Zelarayán. He's in that Nico Lodero mold, doesn't do as much work. But as I've been saying for 3 weeks, international players get 2 years to settle into this league. And in year one, that's what Zelarayán did. So I think he's actually going to get better this year. He's going to be there for every game. And one of the big ones with him is he's so goal dangerous. He can finish with both feet, as we saw in the final. He's always around the 18. And you saw in big games where teams sat deep on them, he's able to create something out of nothing in those big moments. So that's my top three. Any input so far?
Yeah, I'm surprised that Reynoso's not here.
I disagree with the characterization of Zelarayán. Like, he did almost nothing in terms of ball progression for Columbus last year. He does none of that dropping deep stuff that Lodero does so well. So I disagree with that, though I don't disagree with his spot in the top three.
And Weeby's upset about Babela Reynoso, who I have fourth on this list, so you can push him higher if you want. But again, he's one.
Why is it only fourth? Is it because you hate Wes Berdine?
Probably. It's more my guy Rodrigo that I'm here against. That's the second shout out he's getting.
That's cool, man. Because I can rise in the Rodrigo rankings, I'm super. Yeah. I'm positive. That's a good thing.
Listen,
for me.
Babela Reynoso is the hipster number 10, so no one wants to deal with that. But again, with all the things you just talked about with the Lodero, I don't know that Reynoso does those, especially off the ball. So I want to see it for another year, and I just want to see it for an extended amount of time. He came in, and he was creative and active, but it's coming off the signing, and he was fantastic in the playoffs. If he plays that way the entire year, especially without Kevin Molino and whatever else is around him, there's a really good chance that he'll rise in this, but I have to see it for a little bit longer.
So you have four. You have four. Yeah. This is the fun game that I've been playing with myself. How do you – who's going to be the fifth, Doyle? Who do you think he's going to go with? Because there are a lot of options here. You could go Sebastian Blanco. I mean, did we put him at winger already?
Well, he's a winger. Yeah. Zach Wani forgot to
but that's why. And also, you know what? Carlos Vela wears number 10. We did a top five position without – I know, but we did a top five. We did a top five in the entire league.
Didn't. Steve Zakwani did. Carlos Vela is
not in it. He's not in it.
So I said at the top of the show, I would be mad at David if he does not have Latif Blessing listed among the top five number 10s, because his ability to impact every phase of the game is maybe unmatched. He is absolutely
I would like to throw out, just because I know that Dave is a big Montrealer, that Georgi Mihailovic averaged more than half an assist per 90 last year. So I just want to give number. I want to give you that out, because I know you're not going to say Georgi, but you have that out from me.
So Doyle, I do this all for you, so you're welcome, because you can get mad at me because I did not put Latif Blessing as number five. Number five was tight. It really only actually came down to two players. Maxi Morales is the last man out, and Carlos Heel wins the award for this. You saw it from on the ball. He does the work off the ball. I think if he's healthy for the year, he is the other closest player to Nico Ladero and what he can do. You saw the impact that he had on the Revs, whether it's against pack defenses, whether it's in transition, in the postseason, big games, in the regular season as well. Two-footed, clean in possession. He does all the things you want from a number 10 plus. And I'd say most of these guys, they have that level of that, that pushes them up this list. So Carlos Heel is number five. Maxi Morales is number six.
Mauricio Pereira is number seven.
On this list.
I know that Carlos Heel, could you say that in the same mold that Sebastian Blanco is a winger, that he's sort of a winger?
No.
No, I don't think
it's
so.
A little different, I know, but like starting position.
If you look at where, I mean, that's more defensive position, right? If you look at where Heel goes, he's almost never going against the opposing fullback. He's always drifting inside, whereas Blanco, like, he drifts inside a ton, but he also, you know, makes those runs in behind, True. Goes directly at fullbacks, beats guys 1v1. Like, Blanco is, you know, a multifaceted playmaking
winner. All right. I'm just out here trying to play devil's advocate on this. But I like your top five list. I think it was a good one. That finishes off on those. Thanks for...
It was surprising to me. I think it's a stud list, and these are great players. I thought that there would be more that I'd be fighting to get in, and really it was about seven that made a ton of sense, and six that I think were competitive to be in this, where I thought it was going to be 10 or 12 that were a bit more competitive to be on this list.
Speaks to the top tier and maybe how far they are above just about everybody else. And you're also talking about guys who have led their teams at really big moments to keep position in Major League Soccer. All right, that's it for us today. Go check out the schedule at MLSsoccer.com. The full thing is out, 459 games, which I keep saying just to sort of like normalize in my own brain. I've got two 27-inch monitors here in my soccer cave and a TV hanging above them. Those things are going to be full all the time. We're going to be mainlining soccer in 2021. Any thoughts, questions, takes you have, 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Enjoy the U.S. games, everybody. We'll be back on Monday to talk about those. And Extra Time, Club and Country, driven by Continental Tire, comes out next week. Look out for that. Enjoy your weekend.